You're listening to Giant Ear on Free 103.9, brought to you by the New York Society for Acoustic Ecology. This is Andrea Williams, and this month's show is called Kingdoms Sans Humans. We invited listeners to send in sounds of living beings that were not human, and as expected, a lot of them involve some sort of interruption by humans. We're also going to be playing an interview I conducted with Edmund Mooney. He is an electroacoustic composer, sound designer, and member of the New York Society for Acoustic Ecology. He traveled out to central Mexico to make recordings of millions and millions of butterflies. And we're going to share that interview with you. And first, I have a few announcements to make. The NICE, we are presenting EA, which is a group that works with improvisations as well as with rules-based compositions written by individual members. And their piece is going to be called 3.2 Topographies. And for this performance, EA consists of Gil Arno, Richard Garrett, Andy Graydon, Adam Kendall, and Jeremy Slater. The goal is to create a piece in which the shifting sonic space requires constant reevaluation and adjustment by the players to create an integral work, while promoting in the listener a similar active engagement with the space as it transforms. It's going to be at Issue Project Room, and the piece is going to be utilizing Stefan Moore's Hemispherical Speakers, and that's at 8 p.m. at Issue Project Room on March 8th. Coming up March 28th, New York Society for Acoustic Ecology, we are presenting our New York Sound Map at a Surge event. That's by Free 103.9 and Rhizome, and that's at Participant Inc. Gallery in the Lower East Side. You can find more information about these events, and also the playlist can be found at www.nyacousticecology.org. So we're going to be playing the interview, but first I'd like to play two pieces by Joe Maloudis. And he has a book coming out, or possibly right now, that's on my reading list. It's called Ether, The Nothing That Connects Everything. And that's by University of Minnesota Press. And it diagrams the interconnections among cosmic consciousness, hermetic avant-gardes, and technological progress. Okay, here's some of Joe's work, and then the interview will be coming right up.
Thank you.
listening to Giant Ear on Free 103.9. This is Andrea Williams. I'm here with Edmund Mooney, electroacoustic music composer and sound designer, and also a member of the New York Society for Acoustic Ecology. He's going to be speaking about his recording of Butterflies in Mexico for multimedia artist Erica Harsh. I know Edmund Mooney as Ned, so I'm going to refer to him as Ned. Hi, Ned. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Before we talk about your amazing experience with the Butterflies, could you maybe give us a little background on how you got involved with sound design?
Sure. I guess I studied electronic music in college at Bennington College, and before that I had sort of made my own recording, sort of pop music, kind of early 80s stuff. At Bennington I learned that there was this whole other world of sort of experimental composition, and I discovered John Cage there. I discovered all sorts of 20th century music that I didn't know existed, and it sort of led me down this path towards both doing sound design as sort of an art form, but also to incorporate found sounds in my compositional process, and to basically meld these two ideas of sound design and music composition into some sort of hybrid.
So how did you first maybe start working in sound design? How did you transfer from going to school and composing your own works to maybe working with other artists and collaborating?
Well, I think I started that in school too, because I sort of had this feeling that multidisciplinary work was something I was really interested in, and they didn't actually necessarily teach a course in cross-disciplinary musical composition or, you know, electronic music in any sort of as it related to any sort of other mediums, performance mediums or anything. So I started to work with the dance department because they were very receptive to the idea of having a composer who would write music for the dance students. So I started doing that, and in doing that, I guess I sort of developed my own sort of voice as far as collaborative music and dance. And I've just always kept doing it. I graduated, I just kept doing it. I kept making relationships with performance artists, and I also got involved right after graduation with a not-for-profit art gallery in Bennington called No Bias, and through them I did a couple installations for group shows, and so that's how I kind of got into the idea of sound as an installation environment.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk about how you got involved with the multimedia artist Erica Harsh?
Yeah,
for this
actually
project?
I met her at a rooftop party of Andrea Poli's, and she was telling me about various projects she was doing, one of which was the Butterfly project, and I said, I'm really interested, I would love to get involved somehow. And then, as it usually happens, you have these conversations at parties and they never really pan out.
Right.
No one really calls, and you know, it's sort of like, okay. But she actually called me like a year later and said, I'd really like to get you involved in this project, and you know, I have a grant and I have a space in Houston that's going to put me in their show, and you know, I want to go to Mexico. And I was like, wow, okay. You know, because she had already done all of this work to sort of make it happen. She had raised money, and so I felt like I couldn't say no. And also it was just a really exciting idea, this idea of recording butterflies, which just from a biological point of view don't make a lot of sound. So I started to think about that and as a challenge to kind of the acoustic world, that you would somehow have to translate these minute sound waves into something audible.
Mm-hmm. So you were in central Mexico. Do you talk a little bit about arriving there and what that was like?
Well, I flew into Mexico City, which is actually... The geography of Mexico City is it's a plateau at about 4,000 feet or something. So, and they have no emissions standards. So I got off the plane and just the air is just filled with leaded gasoline fumes. It's just incredibly, they have a lot of air pollution problems. Mm-hmm. And so we stayed in Mexico City. Well, we actually got in a car from the airport and drove. We picked up some supplies on the way, and then we just drove to central Mexico. So it took us about I think 4.5 hours to get to Michoacán, which is central Mexico province. I mean, it's a huge state, actually. It would be like 3 or 4 states in the United States put together. And we drove to this little town where we were staying, which was about, I'd say about 15 miles from the sanctuaries. And so that was my first day in Mexico.
So this project with the butterflies, could you tell us a little more about the actual experience of encountering them?
Yeah. I guess the first day we knew we had a very finite amount of time, like 3 days, to go from not recording anything to being completely done with the whole process. So the first day it was kind of nerve-wracking because I hadn't used the equipment before except to sort of check it out to see that it worked.
And what equipment did you have?
I had a direct-to-disc recorder, the Sound Devices 722, which is... it has the quietest preamps on the market, I think. I've seen all the specs, and it's by far the lowest signal-to-noise ratio. So,
why did you choose that?
I chose that because I knew I needed a lot of gain and not a lot of noise because these insects make very little sound. And so I wanted to find the quietest preamps known to man, basically. And this device seemed to have that. So I got that, and I got an extremely sensitive Sennheiser stereo shotgun mic, which would be both very directional but also allow me to capture ambience. I honestly had never heard, there were no sound files that I could access of what this event sounded like. I'd read some descriptions of it that described it as sort of a, I forget the word they used, but it was kind of like a million people sort of making an S sound. and I tried to imagine that. A million people making an S sound. What would that sound like? In reality, what it sounded like when I first got there, I realized that it just sounded like a very light rain shower in, let's say, a rainforest, someplace with really high canopy, and the rain is hitting the tops of the trees. That's what it sounded like until you realize that the sun's out and there's no wind and it's just these insects making this sound.
So on that note, maybe we should play a little selection from Edmund Mooney's recording of Butterflies in Mexico. Could you talk about the work we just played?
Yeah, that was a sort of an overall ambience of the sort of copse of trees that we were in the sanctuary. I guess I should talk about where the sanctuary is and how long it took us to get there. We, it was about 10 miles from the town that we were staying in of Angangeo, which is a sort of post-industrial mining town where they've given over a significant amount of their, I don't know, their ingenuity and all their crafts to the sort of tourist industry because of the butterflies, which were discovered actually, strangely enough, by a Canadian guy who had tracked them. He was just sort of following them around, trying to figure out where they went. Mm-hmm. And he tracked them to this place in central Mexico, and he excitedly started to talk to people there about whether they knew about the butterflies and where they went. And they said, of course, we've been, you know, we call them the, you know, souls of lost children. They're in our religion, basically, is what they said. They've been coming here since, you know, recorded history. And so he was kind of taken aback by that because it was a new discovery for him. And so he actually tracked them to the place where they all congregated. That no one had really put two and two together and followed them or tried to figure out where they were all going or even if they were all going someplace. They just sort of noted their arrival and then their leaving. And he actually found the specific places where they went in the mountains, on these specific, I forget which facing slope it was, but there's a certain physical characteristic that the butterflies look for. And
they're monarch butterflies?
Yeah, they're all monarch.
And about how many? You could guesstimate.
It's tough. Like, I mean, the estimation is like 10 million.
Wow.
but I think it's probably more. I mean, looking at the trees weighed down with them, I was imagining like, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand on each tree.
Wow.
So, but anyway, so they, he discovered them, rediscovered them, or discovered them for, you know, the northern hemisphere. And in doing that, they realized that there could be a tourist industry based around this phenomenon. And since then, one has developed. And so people come from all over Mexico and, I mean, all over the world, actually, to witness this event. And they have set up these sanctuaries where you can sort of walk around and witness the butterfly migration. But we were actually in the place where they don't let tourists go. We had to get a guide and we had to get a bunch of papers signed from the tourist industry and the government saying that we could go to their actual mating ground. And they have all sorts of rules about you can't talk, you can't do all this because they're incredibly sensitive. Mm-hmm. It disturbs them just to have people around. So they're very protective of the butterflies, not only because there is a certain religious aspect to the migration, but also because they've literally become their livelihood. Yeah, they don't want to screw it up.
Did you feel intrusive?
Strange enough, I did almost immediately because I'm shoving this microphone at these insects who are just trying to go about their business, you know, and also they're mating, you know, so I feel like I'm kind of, you know, the odd man out. I felt sort of intrusive. I sort of got over it though, because mm-hmm. the task was to capture the essence of this whole event. And
so that was the main idea of the project.
Yeah, Erica was very keen on capturing all of the sounds, whether they be sort of figurative or real, just the idea of capturing all the sounds involved in this event. Mm-hmm. And as we've gone through the editing process, she's very interested in realism. She doesn't want the sounds to be treated in any way other than to kind of recreate the environment of where we were. So that's what we're trying to do in a sort of three-dimensional surround matrix, mm-hmm. kind of recreate the actual experience from the minutiae of the wing sounds of one butterfly to the overall ambience of, you know, 10 million.
So maybe we can play another excerpt right now of kind of the close-up view sound of the butterflies.
Sure.
So could you just talk a little bit about those two pieces we just played, the butterflies?
Sure. The first one was one butterfly in a particularly lazy mood. They go through this period, I guess, when they're reproducing, where they have stages of dormancy.
Mm-hmm.
If the air temperature isn't right, they will just hug close to the trees and not even fly around. But if the air temperature is right, if the sun's out, if they start to warm up, literally, they will start to take to the air, and there are just thousands and thousands in the air. And so the first one, I think, was a butterfly in the process of waking up.
Oh, how rude. Now.
I know, really, really rude. And the second one was one that was particularly excited because I was having my assistant hold her, or him, I'm not sure which, in her hands, cupping her in her hands, and then I was placing the microphone very close to the wings in order to get this sound of it's an abstract idea, because mm-hmm. normally the butterfly wouldn't ever encounter human hands, but the idea was to try and capture what it would sound like if the butterfly were sort of on the ground with a leaf sort of hitting, with its wings hitting against a leaf, something like that. We tried to manufacture these experiences when they didn't seem to be happening naturally, which I know is like breaking all sorts of naturalist codes of ethics. But again, we weren't there to like be ecologists so much as right. to kind of gather evidence.
Hmm. So that's a neat way of putting it. What type of equipment did you use to get the close-ups?
Same equipment. I just used the direct-to-disc recorder and this very sensitive microphone. I had a windscreen and a shock mount and one of the windscreens is this. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a gray furry thing that you put around a Zeppelin, and it severely cuts out wind noise, which there was a constant sort of breeze.
Mm-hmm. So. And you showed me some pictures, mm-hmm. some really brilliant pictures I hope we can show on the website. There was one butterfly that kind of tagged along with you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This was on the third day after we had had a very disappointing day. The whole second day was a wash because we went to a sanctuary that supposedly the year before, actually not supposedly, Erica had been there the year before and said this was the heaviest concentration of butterflies that year. We got there and it turns out that this was not only not the heaviest concentration of butterflies, that it was at the place we had been at the day before, but that the butterflies had not even descended down the face of the mountain to the point where people could get to them. So we sort of had the tourist experience of what it might be like to go to one of the butterfly sanctuaries on an off day, which was literally, we saw about 20 butterflies. Wow. And so we were very despondent. And so the third day, we went back to the exact same place, but the weather wasn't cooperating. The sun wasn't out, and so the butterflies were sleeping. And so we kind of just had to hang out and wait. And we went back down the path to this place where they had sort of congregated around this big puddle the day before. And we couldn't really find any, but we found a couple subjects. And one of the subjects actually attached itself to the microphone, became very enamored of the windscreen and wouldn't let go. And so in trudging up the path to the sanctuary, he just rode along with me and I recorded him the whole way, kind of vibrating on the windscreen.
So could you talk more about what you're doing with the sounds right now, now that you've come back?
Yeah, we're doing an intensive sort of editing process where we're weeding out sounds. I had gone through cursorily removing all the boom noise, which there was so much boom noise because I've never used a boom before. I didn't understand. I learned a lot the first day. You need a lot of duct tape in order to successfully use a boom scenario, and I'd never done it before.
Everyone always needs duct tape.
Yeah, so we found a roll of duct tape at the end of that day, and so the first day was just, there was so much boom noise and so much handling noise from the boom that that a lot of the recordings were either unusable or the ones that were usable needed serious editing. So I did the first pass of all that, just taking out the mic noise, and then we've been going through sort of systematically finding the files that have the most personality or the different characteristics that we're looking for. And the next stage in the process is going to be getting all of these sounds together in a sort of 15-minute ensemble that can mm-hmm. loop for the installation, which will be in a 6.1 surround matrix with 6 speakers. And we'll have some sounds panning around and others in a more fixed kind of environmental way.
Okay. I was just wondering if you feel you learned anything from your experience just spending hours and hours and days just recording butterflies.
I learned a lot. I mean, I learned that, I don't know, I had some preconceived notions of the equipment I needed. I had some preconceived notions of what the experience was going to be like. And I was just taken aback at how flexible you need to be in a situation where you're working with animals or insects in this case, because if the sun's not out, they don't move. They don't make any sound. You can't capture them. It's completely dependent on all these other factors that you have no control over. So you've spent all this money, you've gone to this place, but it just might not happen. So you need contingency plan after contingency plan. The other thing was that I would have brought different microphones. I would have brought a sort of range of microphones, which I didn't. I was sort of thinking this would be a great all-around microphone, and it sort of was. But I guess the moral of the story is know your equipment intimately. Again, I didn't really have the opportunity because we were renting to get to know it. I know it much more intimately now. Mm-hmm. I know what it's capable of. I know that what it's not capable mm-hmm. of. And so I think it was a pretty good average. Like I averaged all the equipment that I could conceivably get. And then I had to limit myself to, you know, a certain budget. So I don't know. I think it turned out good though.
So you just want to talk a little more about the experience of being with the butterflies.
Right. I mean, that's sort of something that's hard to find words for. I think it just the act of being there witnessing that number of creatures. I mean, it's by far the most creatures I've ever been with, you know, living things. You don't really think about it when you, when I think of insects, I think about they fly by, you know, occasionally they land on me. But when there are, you know, upwards of 10, 15 million of them in a very enclosed space, you have a completely different experience. It's sort of like understanding how few of you are versus how many of them there are. Also, this idea of just there's something really magical about the place, this copse of trees, the silence, except for the insect sounds. You don't really think about insect sounds as, I mean, there are many loud insects that sort of sing in tandem, you know, crickets and insects in the jungle. But in this environment, they were the only insects that were making any sound, and the sounds that they were making were so delicate. But when you get that number of creatures together, just the preponderance of these delicate sounds, it was just kind of I knew I wasn't going to capture it in a recording, and I knew that actually I really want to go back and try and capture it, you know, try and I don't know how I would get up into the trees and maybe place microphones in the tops of the trees, but there's some way to capture the overall ambience of it in a much more specific way that from the ground I couldn't. And I didn't understand the geography of it. I didn't realize that there were going to be millions of them in the tops of these trees that you couldn't get to. And then they would come down if they felt like it, you know, because a lot of them did come down and they were all flying around at one point. But I'm sure there's a very different sound in the tops of those trees, which is what we were hearing sort of filtering down. It's sort of a powerful thing, though, to remember. Just playing these recordings over and over again, we were remembering the experience of it. And so the recordings did capture a quality of it. They captured the event. It's not the way it sounded to us, obviously, but it is a reminder. So I don't know. I think it was all very much worth it.
Okay. Well, where could you tell us where people can view and listen to the final work?
Well, we're installing it in Houston, Texas at mm-hmm. a gallery called Diverse Works. And that'll be on the 10th of March is the opening. And it's up for, I think, a month. It's a big group show, part of Photo Fest, mm-hmm. Which they're branching out from straight photography to installation and video work. And so it's kind of a very exciting, it's an exciting place, and it's an exciting time to be involved with them. They bring a lot of New York artists actually out to Houston. They have a whole performance series. They do a lot of modern dance. They do a lot of sort of experimental installations of all kinds.
This is Edmund Mooney, electroacoustic music composer and sound designer, who just spoke about his recording of butterflies in Mexico. And we're going to end with a final work from his experience. Thank you, Ned.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Edmund Mooney. I forgot to mention there's photos, and they can be found at our website at www.nyacousticecology.org. We're now going to play a piece by Johnny Farrow entitled "There Are No Sound Recordings of Dinosaurs, But There Would Have Been Had the Technology Existed." And he questions, how does one reconcile the line between reality and recording experiment, the recorder and the recorded? Then we will be playing Primatology 101 by Gary DiBenedetto, and following that, Chipmunk by Georgina Lewis. Okay, here we go.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Was that a Land of the Lost theme I did? Well, that last piece was Crickets by Keith de Mendonca. And now we're going to play about 40 minutes of straight-up creature-filled recordings by Mike Hallenbeck. Playlist is at www.nyacousticecology.org.